What's up, Dune fans? Welcome back to the Dune Not Enter podcast, where today we leave a little present in the dunes of spice. I'm your host, Humphrey Hsu, and joining me are my friends and co-hosts, Fillmore John.
Hey, guys.
And Nolan Zhang.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone, indeed. We will be starting with chapter 25 today. First off, how have y'all's weeks been?
I just finished teaching a Bible camp at my church. I stayed all week long, and it was pretty crazy because... Oh man, staying with a bunch of boys all week long. We did some really weird stuff.
Oh,
wow. Okay.
What kind of weird stuff have y'all been doing?
Well, I learned how to play the game Spike Ball, and I was just like, it was really interesting because I walked into the church, I was like, why is there like a tiny circular net on the ground? And I learned it was for this game called Spike Ball, and then they taught me to play that. Oh. It was really fun, except it was only like a 4-player game, except there was more than 4 of us, we had to take turns. We also like fixed our ping pong table because... A ping pong table, the net was too short originally, but then my pastor finally, I guess, readjusted some clamps, or basically he just put up new clamps, I guess, and then we just put a microphone stand as the other part, and we just looped the net around that. We also, like, okay, I'm gonna be honest, I wasn't really much a part of this, but they were like practicing cheesy pickup lines in there, so I was like,
yeah, Nolan doesn't need pickup lines.
No, I was gonna say, Nolan already has his fair share of those, like.
Exactly. I'm just like, this is why I'm not involved here. It's like, y'all do y'all's own thing. Like, I'll just be here to listen to it. And I got Snapchat because they were just like, we need to contact you. I was like, what do y'all use? Like, y'all don't use Instagram? Like, no, we use Snapchat. I was Snapchat.
Oh my.
Yeah, kids nowadays. Uh-huh. Yeah, all they use is Snapchat and all the new. There's some other new social media popped up around my school.
Oh, I was like, Be Real or something. I was like, what is this?
I'm like, I've never heard of that. With social media already. And I'm literally 17, so.
It's too much.
Yeah. I'm already becoming a boomer.
Honestly. Right. Summer's been going. It's almost July already, which is crazy. Nolan, I'll let you take it away with the epigraph, right?
All right, what about y'all's week?
What about my week?
I
haven't done it. I just flew back in from vacation, so I'm a little bit exhausted after switching. I switched from Eastern to Central to Pacific to Central in like 2 weeks, so
gotta get used to the time zone.
A lot of flying and driving, but not bad.
Well, for my week, I also didn't do much. I actually started going out to play soccer again, and I need to get back into shape. And I actually ran around 3 miles yesterday, and my calves are dying.
I played 2 points in tennis yesterday, and I was dying. So
it's okay.
That's the difference between your dying and my dying.
Hey, my teacher said to be realistic. She was just like, "You'll build up stamina slowly. Just gotta be real with yourself."
Well, I don't know, bro. Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta go all in and then you just improve drastically.
Yeah. That's true.
It's way too hot back here. Yeah. So.
Sweating buckets out here.
Yep. Well, yeah. Compared to Nolan, our weeks are always uneventful, but...
What?
But definitely this chapter is not uneventful, so Nolan, you can take it away.
Well, let's start off with this massive paragraph or epigraph this week. Okay, let me start reading. Muad'Dib could indeed see the future, but you must understand the limits of this power. Think of sight. You have eyes, yet cannot see without light. If you're on the floor of a valley, you cannot see beyond your valley. Just so, the Muad'Dib could not always choose to look across the mysterious terrain. He tells us that a single obscure decision of prophecy, perhaps this choice of one word over another, could change the entire aspect of the future. He tells us, the vision of time is broad, but when you pass through it, time becomes a narrow door. And always, he fought the temptation to choose a clear, safe course, warning that path leads ever down into stagnation, from Arrakis awakening by the Princess Irulan. Okay, so first thing I wanted to know, I guess, that I didn't write in my notes, but actually, Arrakis awakening, I believe, is a new book we haven't seen before. At least, y'all remember seeing?
I'll do a quick control F while you keep talking.
Yeah, but I don't really think that we've seen much of this book, at least. And also, something else that I noticed is that we get some insight into how this Muad'Dib truth seeing works. Because before, we're just like, why can't Paw just see the future, right? Like,
right.
Just act. It's like, I don't know, like
we thought it was an overpowered thing. Ability where he could just see everything. You're
possessed. Well, that's not how it works, but yeah. But we start seeing some limitations, and he explains it so nicely that it doesn't feel like a strange handicap. Cause like I know there's like some superheroes like stuff like in the comics or in the movies, and they give like a strange or like a dumb reason why they can't do it. It's like, okay, but like it's just because they're nerfing it, right? But here they explain it so nicely that he's like nod along. It's like, makes sense, Herbert. It's like, yeah. Also notice how I'm not really sure if it's Herbert trying to make biblical allusions right in this epigraph, but it's like the reference to the wide vision and like the narrow doorway. It kind of reminds me of the parable of the wide and narrow path that leads to like destruction, where like that leads to heaven. But it's also kind of confirmed slight-ish when it mentions stuff like the temptation and like the clear and safe path that leads to stagnation. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's just what it reminded me of here.
Well, I mean, you're the expert in this, so I'm going to trust what you're going to say.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because we always assumed, as you said, like the Muad'Dib is this overpowered character, but it's just kind of showing Paul's personality. You know, that path that leads ever down into stagnation. It just shows that he always wants, I don't know, it shows that he wants like freshness, and stagnation is kind of bad for the development, I guess, of the race, right? So.
Right, we're also seeing his limits and like the limits of his abilities, because he's not all powerful like we thought he was, but he really is just a growing person. Mm-hmm. He's still getting stronger.
Yeah, he's also literally introducing conflict for himself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was going to say that I also thought that he kind of maybe doesn't see the future all too clearly, and that sometimes it's not even like the real future, because he tells us here that like a single obscure decision of prophecy, because like one word difference may mean a whole lot in the actual future. So maybe if he doesn't interpret something correctly, he actually gets it like entirely wrong or something. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Perhaps the futures that he sees are just mere mathematical predictions of his that are just so accurate that they might as well be a prophecy.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like a weird mix of Mentat and Bene Gesserit powers of like
he's prediction. He's got the ultimate algorithm. Calculating those probabilities and everything. Mm-hmm. The Arrakis Awakening, it's the first time we've seen this book, so good catch. Cool, so thank you for that. Before we move on to the bulk of the chapter, again, we have the quote section. We moved it to the beginning. Please check out the previous few episodes if you want to hear our reasons why as to we moved it to the beginning. But Fillmore, I'll let you take the first quote. So your quote.
Okay, as for my quote, I chose, "I am an embarrassment to the Emperor," Paul said. "I am an embarrassment to all who would divide Arrakis as their spoil. As I live, I shall continue to be such an embarrassment that I stick in their throats and choke them to death." Words, Kind said. Anyways,
words well, indeed.
The end part of it isn't exactly part of what Paul said, but let's be real here. It sounds pretty cool, nevertheless.
Paul's very self-deprecating here. It's kind of funny.
So my quote was, "Then he looked squarely at Paul, seeing the boy who had now taken on the mantle of manhood, masking grief, suppressing all except the position that now must be assumed, the dukedom. And Kynes realized in that moment the dukedom still existed, and solely because of this youth, and this was not a thing to be taken lightly."
Very powerful.
Indeed.
So my quote is, "Law is the ultimate science," Paul quoted. "Thus it reads above the Emperor's door, I propose to show him law."
What type of law? We shall see. Right.
Bro, whose law? Who making these laws?
Yeah, it's Paul, of course. Yeah.
Of course.
Natural law, maybe.
Yeah. Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, indeed. But yeah, so we can get into the chapter now. So we open this chapter with Paul's point of view. I think the last chapter, right, because that was Hawat. But like in the recently, there hasn't been Jessica point of view, Kynes point of view, etc. Idaho point of view.
It's centered.
Yeah, it's mainly been Paul. So surprise, surprise, Idaho is not dead. He's basically the opposite of dead here at the beginning of this chapter. So he's most definitely alive and most definitely still supporting Paul. And Kynes also shows up. So that's really cool because it's great. He's re-entered the fray.
It's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because as we've said again, he's a wild card character who can make or break the Atreides line. So it's good to see him here still involved in the fray, right?
Yeah, throughout this chapter, we'll see Kynes like overcoming some of his doubts of like helping the Atreides, and we'll really see how Paul like convinces Kynes to believe in him and how he convinces him to still believe in the Atreides' name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's also kind of funny because like Idaho, the way they recognize him coming was that was just like the reckless dash of the hands at the controls. So I guess it's like Idaho isn't that great of a driver, you know? He's a bash of fear for them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think his recklessness is what makes him endearing.
Yeah, I mean, you have this mental image of this guy just smashing controls in the cockpit. How can you not like this guy? Yeah. I don't know. That's right.
Oh, but here we also see something of the Fremen. So when who was it? When Idaho landed, he actually brought some Fremen alongside him. And when they landed, the Fremen pulled out some fabric covers, and they basically just camouflaged the doctors underneath the sands. We can tell by this that this isn't their first time encounter with like doctors. We also suggested that from like when they first piloted the doctors, right? So this makes me kind of suspect that they have a procedure for this, and they have like ways of hiding doctors, meaning that there are probably other available captured doctors that the Fremen have access to. What do y'all think?
Yeah, that's probably most likely how they're familiar with the doctors, because how else would they be able to control them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was just like, no way. Like they're not gonna like make a. I mean, they could make a whole doctor, but like,
right. Yeah, that's just way too much work.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like, I don't know, because I remember the last chapter, Hawat had to blow up his thopter and like bury the pieces. I mean, he could have just covered it in some cloth, you know?
That's true.
An invisibility cloak, and it would have been like much better.
Is that a Harry Potter reference?
Indeed it is.
Yeah. Whoosh.
But I think the thopters would get really hot under the sand because, well, I mean, obviously they're going to heat up under the sun I guess the Arrakis sun. And when you take them out, I would imagine that would be super uncomfortable to get in them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, just imagine it's just like full of sand, right?
And then, yeah. Getting rid of that leather seat, you know, destroying, cracking them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, even in Texas, when we try to get into our cars in 100-degree weather, it's like a steam bath. In
there. Oh, yeah. It's literally a sauna.
Like, the sauna.
Yeah, it's a sauna, and you better not touch the you know, the buckles and all the metal, any metal part, because you'll get your hand burned off.
Oh, I have no idea how like people still drive with a steering wheel, because I heard some people's steering was like really like burning hot after they just get in the car and they didn't put up the sunshades.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Be steering while your hands are burning.
We have like our steering wheels that doesn't get really hot, so I don't know. Maybe some people with their metal steering wheel.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a bad design flaw.
No, especially in Texas, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so Idaho has not been idle. He left the Harkonnens a small surprise, as we alluded to in our intro, in the form of a huge atomic explosion caused by the Lasguns. So we find that the Lasguns, how they generate this nuclear reaction is called subatomic fusion. So when it touches a shield, so normally fusion is on the atomic level. So I can't imagine how much energy is generated when subatomic particles react. So things smaller than what you think of like an atom. So I actually Googled subatomic fusion, since I don't know, I felt like it existed, but I wasn't sure. And so from what I found, it's like quark fusion. So a quark is a subatomic particle. And this was just discovered in 2017.
Whoa.
So Herbert really predicted the future here. You know, he's such a scientist. Yeah, he wrote this one in the 60s, right?
And then
he predicted a scientific innovation in 2017. So, yeah.
Wow. This man's crazy. Way ahead of his time.
He deserves a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, he does.
Imagine. Yeah. But also kind of makes us kind of see that the bigger the size of the shield as well, also like the bigger the intensity of the shield, it also like affects the how big the explosion is. But one part that I'm kind of confused about here is like, maybe since it alludes like a atomic explosion, I'm just kind of confused why they aren't typically stunned or like deaf after such like a close explosion, because I know like obviously they jumped over like a cliff or something, but they were still close enough to probably suffer from major hearing loss or like massive like sound wave wind disturbance. That's what I'm still wondering.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Nolan, it's fiction. You're supposed to pass those details off.
Not
you're
like
looking too much into it.
Not like Oppenheimer journal article.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
When
I mean,
a tortoise flipped over.
I mean, we don't even know if it was nearby though. I mean, it could have just been far off. And
it's true.
Because in some there's some nuclear explosion. You could see the mushroom cloud from what 10 miles away or some 20 miles away. Out.
Is there radiation?
Most not definitely. Really.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there is since it's a nuclear explosion.
Oh wait, right.
Yeah,
but it's usually the nuclear rain after that's more deadly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I love Idaho's casual response to the explosion, though. Here he just says, "Not weapon, m'lady, defense. That scum will think twice before using las guns another time." So yeah, he's just true. He's like the embodiment of, you know, cool guys don't look at explosions, kind of.
For sure.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the scene in those action movies where like the main character slowly walks away from a massive explosion.
Yeah,
and then they have sunglasses on or something, mm-hmm, which makes them look badass.
Yeah, that's like what I was imagining too. It's
like a madman laughing.
Yep, I just took out half of a raucous. Wow, what you got against me? Right, mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Oh, but here's something interesting. When Paul and Idaho started discussing after obviously the explosion and all, they were just like talking a bit. I realized there's like italicization of certain words here or there, such as the word will and the word sire, which to me, I feel like maybe represents the different focuses on parts of Idaho and Paul. So Idaho is like busy worrying about getting Paul away, also Jessica away from obviously the Harkonnens that were chasing them, maybe also away from the explosion they just caused, but basically wanted them to get to safety. But Paul is still focusing on, I guess maybe just like how his father's doing. And being called sire really activated something in him, confirming like his fear that Leto is no more or like is in no position to like lead a resistance or to assist them right now when they need him most, I guess.
Well, I don't know if Paul is still concerned about his father's safety, because I thought Paul kind of accepted Leto was dead when he got the ducal signet. So, but true. Then again, I mean, we keep swapping points of view between people with varying degrees of knowledge, so I can't really keep track of who knows what. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure Paul is convinced that his father's like way far gone.
Yeah, I thought Paul knew for sure that Leto was dead, because I thought his Muad'Dib powers told him that.
Well, yeah, so I guess talking about this Muad'Dib power, we see like a slight instance of the usage, or like I guess a encounter, right? So Paul describes his power of prescience. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's right. Prescience.
So it was triggered by the word sire, and that's in this case, right? So what I'm confused about is what he describes as what he saw, though. He saw, like, quote-unquote, a wild race consciousness that was moving the human universe towards chaos. He just seems like such a doom and gloom type of guy, because, like, toward chaos. It's like chaos theory embodied within Paul. But I mean, maybe, I don't know, because like that's like the type of feeling you might get if you're like always able to see the future, because like you'll always see all the bad and be like, no way, we're all gonna die. Because like you are all gonna die, I guess.
Okay, that's really negative. Anyway.
That's true. Right.
Well, to be fair, that ability would break any normal human, so his attitude is quite understandable considering that he's constantly bombarded with bleak future outcomes.
Yeah, he has a lot of bleak futures right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I mean, Paul already does a really good job winning loyalty. I mean,
he's one step closer to getting a good future.
I mean, even though he's talking to Idaho, who is loyal already, it's a really good start. It's like a really, you know, promising start to his dukedom, that he can show appreciation and respect to those people even that he commands. So as Jessica puts it, such a sure hand my son has with his people.
Yep. Well, you know, the Fremen aren't his people, so those compliments better hit hard, because I'm not sure some compliments are enough to satisfy the Fremen that he's about to meet.
Yeah, he's just, oh, you look good today in that still suit.
For sure.
That still suit fits you well. Well, it better, because if it doesn't, I'm going to die. So,
like, I was wondering how he would compliment them. Like, is he going to go up to a Fremen and say, oh, I like your Chris knife. How'd you get it?
I just strangle the sandworm. No big deal.
Yeah, a 400-meter sandworm.
Oh, yeah, no big deal. You know, just wrap my arms around it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hug a tree. Yeah.
30 seconds, you know. They've been passed out in a couple seconds.
Oh, yeah, no big deal. No big deal.
They got RKO'd.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, I don't know, the biggest compliment you can give a Fremen is like, oh, you know, you look like a sandworm hunter or something. Yeah, anyways, enough silliness. So So here's a cool description of kinds I just wanted to read. I don't really have any analysis on it, but it goes, Kynes stood before them, Jubba hood thrown back, the neck of his steel suit glistening in the green light. His long hair and beard were must. The blue eyes without whites were a darkness under heavy brows. So, I don't know, it's a little bit different from what I think this is like the first time we get a full-on facial description of Kynes, but it's almost, it's like a little different from what I imagined. I don't know why, but I don't know.
Yeah, firstly, I guess long hair, it just seems kind of impractical being in a desert environment. Mm-hmm. But also, he seems a little unkempt, but maybe that's just, I guess I know they don't have bats often on Arrakis. So I don't know, maybe I'm pitching too hard.
Yeah, I don't know. His beard, I didn't imagine he would be bearded either. Like, I don't know. But
that's... Also, why is the light green?
Maybe it's just one of those, one of those laboratory lights.
Because I remember the description of the environment, to me it just seemed like kind of like a bunker, like, you know, like fallout shelter that has like a bunker glow in
that's
that's how I thought of it.
Just like, but usually don't they use just like white light or yellow light? I don't know. Green light just seems kind of random to me.
it's also a little creepy, I feel like. Yeah, I feel like I just like
lots of foreshadowing, like there's just like foreshadowing, foreboding, I guess.
Oh yeah, right, I agree. Yeah, green light gives a sense of extra sense of creepiness, and toxicity, and well, okay, so I've gotten to my quote I picked for the week, so I'll read it again. Then he looked squarely at Paul, seeing the boy who had taken on the mantle of manhood, masking grief, suppressing all except the position that now must be assumed, the dukedom. And Kynes realized in that moment the dukedom still existed, and solely because of this youth, and this was not a thing to be taken lightly. Okay, so Kynes has massive respect for Paul now, so he realizes the weight of the burden placed on this 15-year-old's shoulders, and also realizes the fact that he's literally the last of the Atreides and bears the weight of an entire great house. So it makes me respect Paul a little more too, seeing how much burden he has to carry, and he's literally here, and you know, his decisions will really 100% impact the future of the Atreides.
Yeah, he's got big shoes to fill, and like, I think it's also kind of happy for me to see Paul getting enough respect from Kynes, especially enough to quiet Kynes' fears of having chosen maybe the wrong team to play for. Also, we see that Paul must have really had a very commanding presence, especially if it would make Kynes have hope despite Paul's, I guess, youth or inexperience in this aspect. Because, I mean, like, it's pretty fair. I mean, like, Kynes' reasonable thoughts, he probably... It's true that he may have chosen the wrong team if Paul was anybody else, except we all know that he's not just anybody else, and he has a very promising future because of his Muad'Dib specialty.
Indeed. Very promising is an understatement.
Honestly, though, it's amazing to see such a bratty kid turn into a respective commander. Like, I no longer see him as a selfish child and instead see him as a troubled leader.
Right. Yeah, just like the trouble aspect really makes us connect some parts to him, so it keeps him kind of relatable, but at the same time, he's a big man. He's got many things that we don't understand.
He's acting as mature as his father, in my opinion. And that's, you know, and considering how much we respected Leto, you know, that's really, it's really good for Paul.
It's transferring over some bits.
Yeah, he's really, you know, lived up to the inheritance.
Right. His father also taught him well.
We also see some signs of like shift of interest between what the old Duke wanted and what Paul wants currently, especially when Kynes and Paul were discussing what they wanted to do with the Imperial Ecological Testing Stations. We saw how Duke Leto kind of only saw them as maybe advanced bases for the Atreides when they wanted to maybe have better attack angles or maybe intelligence gathering further out the desert, which upset the Fremen, honestly, because Kynes had ulterior motives. But luckily, since Paul's really perceptive with his new Muad'Dib powers, he kind of recognizes immediately the Fremen's go. And I'm not really sure why, but he's in agreement with that go despite the dire situation that they're in. Because in my opinion, if I was in Paul's shoes, I'd be like, we kind of need these bases too to hide out in, because there's nowhere for the Atreides to go. But he still agrees with the Fremen. He trusts the Fremen are going to provide enough that they don't need to demand their own little space, I guess.
Well, I think it was really smart when he said that he wanted to use the facility to create a planet that supports human life, because we know that's Kynes' main goal, which is to transform Arrakis into a paradise, which it also made Kynes forget about his treacherous thoughts, because he was like, earlier, he was thinking, why am I helping these people?
Yeah, why don't I just kill them?
Yeah. But then later he's just like, this is why. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that he's willing to take the risk and help these guys in exchange for a potentially paradise on Arrakis, right?
Mm-hmm. So, and it's a really big gamble. There's no guarantee that they're going to win.
Yeah, but there's also no guarantee they're going to lose. I feel like everything is up in the air at this point. So I feel like Kynes is in a good position to take this bet. Yeah. And kind of see if he can outgamble the Emperor. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so there's a really cool section here describing the lab that they're in that I wanted to read. So we've already talked about the green light, but the workbench down one side, the walls a featureless rock, instruments lined the bench, dials glowing, wire gridex planes with fluting glass emerging from them, an ozone smell permeated the place. So again, it's a little bit spooky, but you can pretty clearly, I think, visualize some areas of the lab. So it's definitely pretty different from the lab I work in. First off, the lab I work in is above ground. But there's also a line about cages of small bats lining the walls. So perhaps the bat that we encountered last chapter was like genetically engineered of some sort to act as a communication device. I'm not sure. What do y'all think?
Maybe, but it could just be a training station. Maybe not specifically genetically engineered, but just trained to be this way.
Oh, training the bats. I see.
Yeah, because they could have just used artificial selection, like what we do with our farms, I guess, to make them be this way.
Right. I don't know. But it like kind of also is weird that they don't just use normal telecommunication devices, right? Because I guess they're just super worried about getting tapped or something. But
yeah.
But these bats seem to be reliable enough, though, so I won't question the Fremen decision.
Yeah, I feel like the Fremen also have like a high respect for nature, so I don't really see genetically modifying the bats is a very Fremen thing to do, but maybe I could be wrong.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because they seem to be really one with the desert, and and they probably wouldn't want to harm the bats in any way, right? Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Here we also see some references to the Fremen hierarchy, especially when Jessica noted how royal Kynes' voice was. So I'm just wondering, because the planetologist who came from who knows where, like he's an outsider from the Imperium, right, can rise as such an important figure in this Fremen tight-knit community. Nah, I'm not really sure how it works, right? So I'm quite interested in how the Fremen command structure is like and how they choose their leaders and how Kynes was able to place himself so highly up on their list, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's also noted that Kynes has a quote-unquote royal voice. Maybe that's foreshadowing something. So it implies that he's some sort of big figure outside the Fremen too, right? So I wonder if Kynes had to go through some like hazing or something to get to the position that he got into. Like, I don't know, the Fremen have some really weird
Texas
procedures.
Texas A.M. bans hazing.
Yeah. So that's I don't know, because he definitely had to do something to get the respect of all of these Fremen, and we know that the Fremen are very hard to communicate with,
right?
With Hawaii, at least. Yeah,
I mean, we know Duncan was able to get the Fremen's respect, so I wonder what Kynes had to do.
I just feel like Duncan and Kynes are slightly different, though, because I remember Duncan is a warrior, but Kynes is obviously not a warrior, so maybe he had another way.
We don't know if Kynes is able to fight or not.
He just whips out a few moves, you know. just don't know. but it's interesting because he seems like a very passive aggressive kind of character, and it's kind of interesting to it would be really interesting to see how he got to, you know, how he got all these super hard to communicate with Fremen to communicate and respect him.
Also, like, just want to say that these Fremen quarters don't seem quite too bad from the description, because to me, it seems that it's comparable on competence with Atreides quarters. If obviously they had, I don't know, lived underground like the Fremen did, or even like better than Atreides levels if they have lived underground as well. Because, like, yeah, it's probably not as wide as Atreides, like, I guess, palace or whatever, but they were underground. It's harder to dig underground and it's a lot harder to build stuff. Mm-hmm. But also the Fremen seem to have stuff that the Atreides ran out of. I remember the Atreides were struggling and like getting decreased coffee rations, but like the Fremen are just like, yeah, bring up some spiced coffee. And now and they still have coffee. They have like quite a nice room layout there, have suspender chairs and stuff. So they also have file cabinets and even like multiple escape routes. So they don't seem as broke as they should be. Also, Jessica noted like they have stuff with Plasteel. I'm not really sure what Plasteel is or how valuable it is, but she was quite surprised. So it's just like, they're not broke, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like a pretty cozy underground hideout to me. It's just like a, you know, a retreat sort of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It doesn't, I mean, it just seems like a room and then very nice.
A retreat in the desert.
Yeah, a small.
Well, I'm sure they have some sort of a contract with the Spacing Guild that makes them, or yeah, that allows them to buy all of these items.
Yeah.
I just probably with spell. Spice, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, they have an Airbnb in the desert.
Yeah, they have a 3-star hotel or something. A hostel.
A payment is 1 teaspoon of spice.
A teaspoon. Wow. That's like enough to buy you a house somewhere.
Yeah.
But in the Beverly Hills.
I guess spice is pretty worthless on Arrakis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, well, I find it pretty interesting that Kynes avoids calling Paul sire or duke because his actions, and I find these actions to be kind of confusing because, well, is this because he sees Paul as the Muad'Dib and therefore doesn't see him as the duke, or he just dislikes outsiders from Arrakis and refrains him from calling him duke because it would be like he's accepting a foreign power as someone above it?
Uh-huh, right. I don't know. I think that it's more of the latter. I think he's more accepting that Paul can actually command him, right? So Kynes wants to make sure that Paul is deserving of that respect, and therefore doesn't address Paul by his title until he's deemed worthy, I suppose.
Yeah. We've seen similar situation where he judged Leto the same way of like whether he's like a good duke or not, or like whether he's worthy of his respect, or like worthy of like Fremen communications, you know?
Right.
So he's shown stuff like that. But I think I find it even weirder somehow that Paul and Jessica also refuse to address Kynes with the proper title that he has in the Fremen community, which is Liet. So, like, despite every Fremen giving Liet the title, I mean, giving Kynes the title, and I've heard it multiple times, like, they refuse to address him in the same way. I mean, I still kind of believe it's maybe just like a standoff between the two of like who will submit to whose authority, you know, whose title will go first.
Yeah, it's Kynes versus Paul. Today's matchup. Yeah, but I don't know, they're probably just used to calling Kynes by his imperial name, so I don't know if it's a standoff, but it's really hard to imagine him outside of his role as this tame planetologist guy, as a scientist.
He just goes home and like raises his hand and he's a like, cult following already.
Right, he just has a totally different life outside of his normal work.
Now working
total alter ego life. Yeah.
Well, Paul actually holds up his father's ring when Kynes was questioning him and refers to himself as a hatchet man, or in other words, a soldier of the Imperium.
Uh-huh.
And I find this to be ironic because even though the House of Atreides is in shambles right now, he still holds way more authority than a common soldier.
Right.
I think Paul, in some way, is trying to go about and say that despite their current situation of obviously the Emperor having betrayed them, the Sardaukar coming, like the Duke's authority, that like the whole like who got the deed, the whole title, and like the authority of the Duke still eventually comes from the Imperium. So as long as the Imperium is in like rule of the universe, the Duke remains in power, because we know that like there's some royal blood stuff going on. And we have to, like, in order for the Fremen and in order for the Atreides to truly win, despite the Imperium being against them, they have to somehow reach some agreeable term with the Imperium, or else it would just like never reach a complete victory. They'll always be fighting some endless war, and it'll be terrible because they'll always be restless.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So.
Okay. So this is where we get to my quote, and I will repeat it. It is, "I am an embarrassment to the Emperor," Paul said. "I'm an embarrassment to all who would divide Arrakis as their spoil. As I live, I shall continue to be such an embarrassment that I stick in their throats and choke them to death." Words, Kynes said.
Words indeed. Yep, he definitely said some words. What those words mean is a completely different story.
Definitely. So, well, Paul realizes that him being alive is one of the worst scenarios for the Emperor, and that he will be a thorn in the side of the Imperium for as long as he is alive. And although his wording isn't very elegant, it left a comedic element to the serious tone of the chapter, especially the part when Kynes said words, which got me cracking up a little bit.
Right. I mean, it seems like a super melodramatic, he's kind of childish proclamation, he's using all this fancy romantic language and everything. And even though Paul isn't really in a position to say stuff like this, I mean, come on, he's a fugitive. You know, Arakin is overrun. Arrakis is overrun. You know, Harkonnen sitting on Leto's chair, right? Wondering how he didn't get killed. But, I mean, at this point in time, you know, Paul is saying this type of stuff is a really big deal. I mean, I guess it's a good mindset that he still believes he's like a really big guy and he can still do big things.
He gotta believe, you know?
Yeah, he's believing in himself, which is also good. But I think it's a little overdone here, you know?
Yeah.
He's gonna choke them to death. Like, bro, Paul's the one about to get choked to death. He's not.
Yeah, we could hear some spite coming through here, yeah.
He's
literally backed up in a corner.
Yeah, he's defiant, you know? He's just... he's swinging the hardest because, you know, animals fight the hardest when they're backed into a corner. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, we're actually introduced to some new vocabulary here when Paul mentions a beast Robin, which I assume to be a Harkonnen leader elite.
Actually, the Baron mentioned something about putting Robin over this planet, I think, a few chapters ago. So you're probably right that it's some Imperial leader. I wonder why he has the title beast, though. I want a beast on my name.
Yeah, I think we remember something from when he was discussing with Fade Rautha. He said that like Fade Rautha would be the savior, and if he's gonna put the Robin first, and the Robin would be like terrible to the Fremen, and then Fade Rautha would swoop in and be like, "I'm your hero," and like Robin personally.
Oh, maybe so he's beast is like a terrible leader, I guess.
Like a bad, like mean leader, like vicious,
a tyrant, basically.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And he also mentioned the Bill of Particulars, which reminded me of the Bill of Rights. And I'm not entirely sure what this bill entails, but I think it has to do with intergalactic laws and going against it results in a space crime.
Yeah, kind of like the Geneva. The Geneva Convention or the UN or something. Yeah, the Geneva suggestion. Yeah, I mean, perhaps... this bill particulars may also deal with the particular proposition Paul is making. So he says that he would present his case to the Emperor and give him this alternative to chaos and, you know, the lands rather than Imperium fighting each other, certainly with the use of atomic weapons and destroying each other in the process, you know, literally destroying the universe. So I wonder what his case entails. So Paul really kind of sees himself as someone, again, I was just saying he has this bigger than life image of himself. Right, mm-hmm. He sees himself as someone who mediates between the Imperium and the Lanzarad. You know, he sees himself as this like peacemaker kind of guy. Right? Oh, I'll show the Emperor my law and my reasoning, and then that way he'll understand and won't fight. But I mean, it's a big responsibility to hold. We'll have to see if he's up to the task. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm a bit skeptical. Yeah.
Me too.
Right. So what's also worth discussing here is Paul's plan. So, of course, first his plan is to do that Bill of Particulars thing I just said, but essentially he also wishes to aim for the Imperial throne, which is surprising. I mean,
that was a big reveal.
Yeah, it was. Like, I know. Because
I mean, it was kind of what I was speculating earlier. Like, he's probably going to go for the throne.
He's going for the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
He's jumping a couple of steps.
Uh-huh. Right.
Just a couple.
Yeah, just a couple, right. Totally. Right. But I mean, so we get to know that there's no heir, there's no male heir to the current emperor. So he only has daughters. And it would be really symbolic for Paul to be emperor. And this is why. The Imperium leader, which would be Paul, if he becomes emperor, he would be the leader of the Imperium, but he's also a Bene Gesserit. He also has Mentat capabilities, and he's also a member of the Lanzarad Great Houses since he is Atreides. Actually, he would probably still lead the Atreides house, right? So he would really have a foothold in every direction. And this is the I guess maybe a political scheme that the Bene Gesserit are going for, to this kind of person would unite all sides of the equation.
So yeah, it kind of like heals the rift between all the houses.
Right. Yeah, tactical marriage on another level, you know? Tactical marriage, except for between like four different parties.
That's crazy.
Right. It also kind of sets an end goal of what the book is going to be, because if he becomes the emperor, I guess that's basically it.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. So, but I mean, at the same time, because he's going for so much, he might just end up with none of them at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He shot too high, you know? He missed.
Yeah. It's all or nothing at this point. And well, it's Paul, so he's probably going to get it.
Oh, yeah. He's our OP protagonist. So, yeah.
He's got big stuff to work up to. But I'm also kind of surprised because when Kynes was just like, do you think he could do it? He actually asked Jessica, right? It just shows that he respects that Bene Gesserit as much as a mentat. Because Jessica was just like, what do you mean? I'm not a mentat. I don't do the decision crunching. Like, I don't crunch numbers. I just assess people, right? So she's like deflecting responsibility. But surprisingly, Kynes doesn't really accept that as like a good answer. It kind of suggests to me that maybe among the Fremen, Bene Gesserit holds some sort of reverence, and like they are the ones who make the decisions instead of mentats. So like they hold like a greater power or a greater influence than mentats.
Well, I think it's probably the missionary Protectiva doing their job here.
Maybe. Oh, yes. Yeah, partly that's. And I mean, the Bene Gesserit also are like, they have a lot of mentat-like capabilities. I feel
they're smart.
They're really good at analysis. And honestly, sometimes they have a lot of overlap, like Jessica registering the scene. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a really computer-y thing to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like, honestly, because the Bene Gesserit, maybe they're not as computationally efficient as a mentat, mm-hmm. but definitely they have a lot more human-like aspects.
Also, yeah, I think they also bring like the religious aspect of Fremen, which makes them get along more. Uh-huh. Partly because of Missionary Protectiva.
Yeah, I think the Missionary are really doing their job here. Mm-hmm.
You guys also remember when they referred to Jessica as the chosen one?
Oh yeah, I don't know.
They never really did much with that, did they?
No, they haven't. Yeah, so maybe. I mean, I'm sure Herbert didn't forget about it.
Yeah, something maybe we'll get more reveal once they get to like an actual like home base for the Fremen. This is just like a random ecological plant still.
Right.
Okay. Now let's go on to my quote. So I'll reread my quote. So it says, "Law is the ultimate science," Paul quoted. "Thus it reads above the Emperor's door. I propose to show him law." So this basically quote overall resonates with me because here's the thing. A lot of things comes down to like this plan of Paul's. Firstly, is this law enforceable or not? And like, secondly, how and why is this law enforced? All these things you have to keep in mind about laws, because much of the time, many things are laws. Like we mentioned the Geneva suggestions, but because they're like unenforceable or someone refuses to enforce them because things are complicated when you try to enforce them, society just lets it slip, you know? It's just like, frown, boohoo, like you're a bad person. But you know what? You're still just going to get most like a slap on the wrist. No it's punishment. Just like that.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like wondering like how much is Paul actually able to do with this like law, because the other houses are still afraid. Like if he isn't able to be the unifier that they need, his plan will overall fail anyway. But at the same time, Paul kind of banks on the fear of the great houses and the excuse of keeping the Emperor in check, this attempt to rally them towards war. So like honestly, playing the scapegoat, playing like the downfall of the Atreides as the rally that they need isn't the worst idea, because they're already there, you know, they already downfell. So like most people typically won't commit to something so serious without some type of rallying thing or some type of excuse, such as like aka a breach of law, aka like a destruction of a fellow relatable human being.
Like a martyr, right?
Yeah. They need a martyr, and in this case, Paul is willing to paint the Atreides as the martyr they need. I'm just hoping that when it comes down to it, this law is actually so like it works out, because the Landsrat could just be like, no, we have too many ties towards the Emperor. Like, no, the Sardaukar too powerful.
Right.
Just so like it.
There needs to be some spark, I guess, to motivate them to you know, either work out their conflicts or have a conflict. Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to really convince them that they're also backed up against the wall, just like their Atreides were backed up against the wall.
Right, yeah, because from what I can see, you know, tensions are mounting and... Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse from here. Well, Paul actually bargains that Arrakis will become a paradise if he becomes the emperor he's bargaining with Kynes in this case.
Uh-huh.
And Kynes responds with, "My loyalty's not for sale, sire." And in response, Paul apologizes and says, "You say you're not for sale, but I believe I've the coin you'll accept.
Okay.
For your loyalty, I offer my loyalty to you." Totally.
Okay.
So Paul really is a master negotiator.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you would put any big business in our world into bankruptcy if he had his
Amazon.
Way.
Amazon?
Yeah. Elon Musk got nothing on him.
Nothing at all. Yeah, balls.
He's a man of small businesses.
And he knows exactly what strings to pull. Like, it's really surprising because, you know, because he knows Kynes is so into making Arrakis as a habitable planet. And he knows exactly, you know, where to put his chips so that Kynes believes him. And I don't know. It's like, it's really crazy. Right?
The master honestly, manipulator.
I kind of like wish I kind of have this same honesty, but also forwardness of Paul. Because he doesn't just have the same honesty. He puts it out there. And he lets you know his feelings.
Uh-huh.
It's like, overall, this type of brutal honesty, in a way, it was like the fault of Leto, right? Because he put it out there. It led to a lot of mistakes happening. But it's also like the same skill that builds trust so quickly among people, especially the Atreides ranks. So he's also able to leverage his position so well, because he's just like, even though I guess the Duke is gone and like our house is kind of fallen, I'm still the Duke. I still have the authority over the Atreides people, and there's still some of us left. So still able to leverage whatever he has left to wield like a very powerful and dangerous weapon, because he does it to his maximum potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really nice seeing the authority that he carries despite objectively he's got nothing left, but he's just like, the potential is still there. He wields that potential powerful.
Yeah, and again, he's, you know, really visualizing himself as bigger than his current situation is, and it's helping him make all of these bold decisions. I think that will pay off, definitely. But he's also
like
making
the promises like presidents.
Yeah, and this bold decision here, it's like a really big gamble, because given Paul keeps his word, which I believe he will, he's the type of person to keep his word, and he's in the Atreides, right? He's just dedicated himself to the betterment of the Fremen if he were to ascend to the throne. So, okay, so including everything I said Paul was earlier, you know, he has his foot, like, dipped into Mentat, Bene Gesserit, he's part of the Landsrat, he's in Atreides, he would be Imperial Emperor, but now he's also a Fremen, you know, he's supporting the Fremen. So that's even more impressive. He just adds to his list of joined communities, right? And that's...
He's a jack of all trades.
Yeah, but
he's a whole pentagon.
He's not even a jack, he's a master of all trades. Here. He's got the ideas into everything. And that's really...
Well, maybe not a master of the Imperium just yet.
In the scenario that he becomes the Emperor.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Yeah.
He'll work up to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's getting there slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the book, Kynes would refer to Paul as sire sarcastically, and it would be in italics to show this. But when Paul said that he would dedicate himself to Kynes or the Fremen, there were no italics, and Kynes' response, his tone had completely changed. Because
breaking point.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in that moment, Kynes would have actually died for Paul, no matter like what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Just two men jumping to die for each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what we need right now in this book, so that's good.
We need loyalty on another level.
Yeah, and it's great to see that finally Kynes, you know, has seen through this, you know, youngling Paul, and now Paul's an old wise man. Yeah, he's got, you know, days of experience under his belt. Yeah, he's just... So it's great to see this mutual respect they have, and I'm really excited to see what their partnership holds, potentially in the next half of the chapter, and also of course in the rest of the book.
I'm excited for what's to come.
To see, because like with the Fremen on board now, like totally on board with Liet leading them, we see we're like going to get to more exciting parts as they actually commit to the battles that are about to follow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, and that's a little preview of probably what's to come. And yeah, if you guys want to hear about the next few chapters, of course, keep tuning in. But otherwise, that concludes for this chapter. So that is the end of this discussion for this episode of the Do Not Enter podcast. Make sure to read to the end of chapter 25 and tune in next time when we discuss it. As always, thanks to all of you listeners for being patient with us and being interested in our thoughts. Follow us on Instagram at Do Not Enter, Reddit u/Do Not Enter, and Twitter at Do Not Enter. And email us at dunaenter@gmail.com with any questions, feedback, or I dare say, can someone else
Rection,
say it?
Rection corrects.
Yeah, Rection corrects. Sounds good.
Correct, Humphrey.
Yeah, I am always correct, of course. Yeah, but in all reality, if we are making any mistakes, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know, and we will very gladly correct ourselves. Give us a review on iTunes or Spotify. It only takes a few seconds of your time. Just make an account, of course, and go to our show page. Just search in the iTunes app or the Spotify app, and click the 5 stars button. Leave a nice comment. It really lets us know that we're doing a good job, and motivates us to keep creating new content. It also helps us climb the charts, so to get our podcast out to more listeners, and of course spread this love for Dune. And otherwise, I think that's about it. So have a great week, and we will see you all back very soon.
See you guys.
Bye.